Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And we are back in person for the first time since the pandemic started in 2020. So this is the first time, aside from something I'll talk about in a minute, this is the first time we've been able to sit down with each other. So it feels good to be in the same room.
Yay!
So since we last spoke, a couple things have changed for me. First, we didn't talk about this. We had an episode in season three called BGLOs and Biblical Interpretation.
Okay.
At the time, we were joined by a good friend of the show. At the time, he was my dean. Now he is the president of Pittsburgh Theological Seminary, Reverend Dr. Asa Lee. And he was a member of Kappa Alpha Psi. Uh-huh. And you remember Delta Sigma Theta. And I was nothing at the time. It's not that I was nothing, but I was not.
You were nothing. No, just kidding.
Right. GDI. Since then, I have become a member of the illustrious, the first Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated.
Here we go.
Well, you got to say first, because somebody had to be first.
It's not bragging, it's just...
That's just the order
there
of events.
You go. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I feel very proud of you.
Thank you very much. I learned a lot. And that show actually put some things on my mind. And and it was part of the influence for me pursuing membership. So that was one of the big changes since we last spoke. And then also I graduated finally from seminary. So now Master of Theological Studies. So I have my Master's in Theological Studies. Yeah. And I don't have any papers to write. There's nothing on the horizon.
Congratulations on that.
All reading that I do is for pleasure. Okay. And so it feels good. So those two things happened since we last spoke.
That's exciting.
We also started a series with our family over at the Brown Liquor Report on dystopia. And the idea for that series is that we are currently living in dystopia, and dystopia is different for different people, depending on your location. For many of us, it is and has been dystopia for a while. And so the purpose is not to just describe all of the ways that we are experiencing dystopia, but to provide some historical context for the times that we're living in and also some solutions for how to navigate it.
Right.
So we've done one episode with our friends. You can check it out. It's posted on both of our feeds, and we have more coming up. So be looking out for that collaboration. We always love getting up with them.
So Mike and I were discussing our body of work and how to kind of get restarted. And what we realized is that we've really done some great shows about pertinent topics across social justice issues, about examining the Black church and its influence and its impact, and examining how our cultural institution intersects with the bigger body of what it means to be religious in America. That said, we will be revisiting some of the, you know, topics that we feel are still pertinent, just to see where we land now on the issues. So today's show is entitled Suffer the Little Children. Back in season two, when I first ever joined as a guest speaker, a guest host, we discussed the Bible and guns. And what we were kind of examining was, where should we be policy-wise as the faithful, as the body of Christ on this issue? And I think that we've made an argument that there are places where the body of Christ lands, and then there are places where we have to recognize that our branch of Zion is a little different, and that the things that motivate us and sustain us and even give us pause might be different, the intersection between our faith and our culture. So we're going to be revisiting that discussion about guns in our society.
So that discussion occurred in or on or about February of 2018.
Yeah. Like
following the Parkland shooting.
Yes.
And so that was the impetus for that conversation. Interesting going back to listen to that in preparation for this show. I miss JW. Like, yeah, I miss what he had to offer. He had some really good insight in that show. So, so that's kind of
stories. Yeah. I hadn't listened in a while.
So, here we are again after a string of mass shootings.
Yeah.
And so that's the reason why we're revisiting the insights from that conversation, just to like you said, see where we land, see what's changed since then, what hasn't changed, and where we are as a nation.
Yeah. So going back to that Parkland, Florida shooting, the shooter entered a school, and unfortunately, it was major carnage at the time. It was shocking. This was also after the Sandy Hook shooting of, I think, early 2016, where unfortunately over 20 kindergartners and first graders had been murdered by a young man carrying an assault weapon into their school and wreaking havoc. The Parkland shooting was different and caught our attention because the surviving students immediately became advocates and started speaking out. I think that there were a few different details of that shooting that caught people's attention at the time, but I do believe that that was the beginning of the end of the shock of mass shootings, because what we held in that previous conversation is that Congress was very slow to act after Sandy Hook for whatever reason. Looking back on it, there was really no good reason to back away from legislation or to not confront what such an act meant and reflected about our country and meant and reflected about certain people here and the level of violence that could be sustained here. After the Parkland shooting, unfortunately, you did see politically a lot of energy go into not cutting off access to the ability to purchase guns. Mm. Now we kind of deal with mass shootings as par for the course, and it seems so disheartening to say that. I don't know that we ever come to expect them, but they still have a pattern.
It's a couple things there. So when you say Congress was slow to act, let's talk about the reasons that they were slow to act. Just a cursory review of politicians who received donations from the NRA. Mitt Romney, $13.6 million reasons not to act. Senator Richard Burr, $6.9 million.
Wow.
Senator Tom Tillis, $5.6 million. This is as of May of this year. Senator Roy Blunt, $4.5 million. Senator Marco Rubio, $3.3 million. Tom Cotton, $1.9 million. They have many reasons to avoid action on this issue. And this is in light of the actions that have been, the legal actions that the NRA has sustained, which has really crippled them as an organization financially.
Right.
They've built up goodwill over decades supporting this list is all GOP politicians. And so we have to make sure that we're drawing the correlation between the inaction and the reasons that they remain inactive or obstruct action. One of the things that's interesting about the most recent school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, is, as you mentioned, there's more of a divide in the response. So after Sandy Hook, there was pretty much universal grief, outpouring, sympathy, fear, all those things. Well, not universal, but...
You know, because...
There was shock. There was
definitely shock, but I do believe that Sandy Hook instantly got pounced on, and now we're on the other side of it. So now we're on the other side of seeing that guy from InfoWars has been Alex sued Jones. For saying that Sandy Hook was a false flag and that it wasn't real and all of this. Right. And I do believe that people jumped on that or tried to make that a thing because of the carnage and how just incredulous it was in the face of little children, unfortunately, being murdered at school by another child. by another young person, mm-hmm. that unfortunately some of the loudest, most radical voices on what we call our political right said that these were actors, said that this wasn't real, said that there was some space for argument on, you know, what should be done, what, if anything, should be done. So I think it's important to say that, because at the time, that's what I feel like started to enter into that echo chamber, mm-hmm. that stopped people from maybe responding with their most compassionate heart. Mm-hmm. Even the politicians, even if we go down the list and say, you know, these people received this type of donation or whatever, I do feel like at that time, the electorate was fed up, mm-hmm. because we saw, you know, we saw the difference between the big dollar donations and what they were able to get our so-called representatives to do versus other types of fundraising models that made us feel more empowered for who represented us. So there is a difference.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So keep in mind, Sandy Hook occurred in 2012. I didn't realize it was that long ago. Yeah. By the time we get to Parkland in 2016, we're 2 years into the idea of alternative fact. And so the echo chamber that brought, that arose during Sandy Hook is amplified by the time we get to Parkland. And so whatever shock and outcry that occurred at Sandy Hook waned a little by 2016. And mm-hmm. and so now I've noticed amongst my peer group that, yes, shock and outcry still exist. But as you said, there's a amount of acceptance that's coming in to the picture, which is dangerous for us because we continue to send our kids to these places. Not just, and it's not just school shootings, because we know what happened in Buffalo. We continue to have to, you know, go outside and be outside now that we moved into an endemic phase of COVID. So, Vince, I was at the movies today, and I'm in there, and then I hear something like a door banging shut over and over again. And so I'm like, oh, here we go. Like, where's my points of exit? And so understanding that that's where we live right now, It's really challenging. In this recent shooting, the Uvalde shooting, one of the things that came up was the focus on what the police on the scene did and did not do, what they knew and when they knew it. Mm-hmm. And it just made me go back and look. In Parkland, there was an officer, Scott Peterson, who was on the scene and did not intervene.
Right.
And he's also scheduled for trial. That date hasn't been scheduled yet, but he's going to stand trial for negligence in that case. Mm. But what's happening in the Uvalde case is the focus on the police negligence and the call that was made on the ground to treat that situation as a barricade situation as opposed to an active shooter kept the officers outside for much longer than they would had they just went in and intervened as an active shooter situation calls for. Mm-hmm. The focus on that takes the focus off of the actual problem,
which is
the availability of the firearms. In this case, to a young man who had turned 18, went to purchase the firearms on his birthday, and then went to the school. So we still have a problem that we have not solved. And in fact, because of the, I can't call it apathy at this point, but because of the acceptance that's settling in at this point, I would argue that things have gotten worse.
Really begs the question, you know, will there be any alignment through the policies that we say we establish to protect children? I do believe that politically children are scapegoated to manipulate adults to do certain things with their votes. I see it happen. You see it happen in local politics all the time, state politics. They're like, do this because we're going to fund education if you vote for this thing. And even when people don't have their own kids, they can say, or they justify voting for higher taxes or voting for new businesses in their state or whatever. They justify these actions because the marketing of the vote or the marketing of the issue says this will somehow benefit children who can't get to the polls. So we've seen that happen, like we said, about education. But there are some other hot button topics that there just seems to be some disparity between us protecting or saying that we're going to protect a child in some ways versus others. And I think that confronting gun violence is one of those issues that is now cutting across all of America. Once upon a time, when this issue could be kind of flippantly discussed as an urban issue, gang violence, misconstrued as just happening in one community, the answer was to be as punitive as possible, always assuming that guns were going to be illegal, okay, in certain communities. We want to prosecute to the fullest extent of the law. We'll make sure you get a lot of time for that, felonies that you can't get off your record, blah, blah, blah. And you saw that be a policy response. Well, then you always had these outliers of these certain factions, the fringe, the people who had access to guns and just didn't want their access cut for whatever reason. We talked about that back in season two, where we were like, what are you arming up for? What are you anticipating? What are you expecting? And I feel like in the last, because that was 4 years ago, but in the last 4 years, we've gotten some very stark examples of what people might have ever been preparing for, not least of which is the increase in these randomized mass shootings. This is a community now that has suffered through a lot of protest and unrest about police violence and about state violence. This is a community that is trying very, very hard to hold on to its institutions. Things have changed from even what we say politically, one administration to the other. We're fighting to hold on to the veracity of our institutions. The other thing that has happened, quiet is kept, is that we have seen an uprising politically carried out by I'm not throwing stones, but it's kind of keeps falling on the same camp in our spectrum.
Who's the camp?
I mean, they over there on the right. They're in a echo chamber. They're in a bubble. They've been emboldened. And I think that one thing that they've seen as far as reining them in is that this is really a call to the carpet for America, because America's not good at reining in its radicals, obviously. And I don't even want to oversimplify that into a black or white thing or even just a Christian thing. But it is quacking like a duck that a lot of these examples are coming from the same core, the same nucleus of information and development. It's no longer just, again, these stereotypes, the loner with the, when it was the shooting, when it was Columbine, people talked about those shooters and said that they were loners,
yeah,
and they were obviously mentally, you know, challenged or whatever. And they basically said they were outliers. They were the exception to, you know, this order, this rule, because people think that they're much better than they are. Then we had movie theater shootings, just like what you said. You hear a loud noise and you're looking for your exits, but you're doing that because of what happened in Aurora at the Batman screening, mm-hmm, many years ago, where somebody used the cover of the movie to shoot up the movie theater. The availability of the assault weapon, mm, doing so much damage.
Yeah.
Then you have our school shooting. But then you have our church shootings. Then you have shootings in the community. So now we're not just talking about, oh, gang violence in certain neighborhoods, which is another story for another day. We're talking about even stuff that has happened, like what happened in Buffalo, where now you have people going about their regular day of business, coming under attack at a supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
10 people.
Yeah.
So fast. So it begs the question. You say you think we've gone too far, but we do have to respond. Something has to happen where we say, has it been enough?
So the issue on the table is an issue of, it's being couched as an issue of rights because of the constitutionality of the right to firearms, the right to bear arms, or the right to, as we talked about in the other episode, mm-hmm. to be a part of a well-trained militia?
Yeah.
Okay. And when we start to talk about rights, the question is very difficult, and it appears out of the hands of the general populace and in the hands or the purview of constitutional scholars and what they think and things like that. You bring up a point that I've had to consider, and that is, on one hand, you have a group that supports the Second Amendment to such a degree that they don't want any of those rights infringed upon to the detriment of the citizens, and in some of these cases we're raising children. Mm-hmm. It cannot be lost on us that same group right now is looking forward to the opportunity to infringe upon the constitutional rights of women. Mm-hmm. And in their argument, for the protection is for the protection of what they deem as children. So that's not the trickiest part. That's the obvious part. The tricky part for me is that's their side of it.
Yeah.
The other side of that says we should infringe upon these rights to bear arms, these Second Amendment rights. And as you said before, the children are being used for the protection of the children.
Mm-hmm.
The tricky part is, in the other side of that argument, there's a debate about when the fetus becomes a child.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's debate there. What there's not debate about is the fact that those children in Parkland and Sandy Hook and Uvalde were children. Yeah. There's agreement on it.
Mm-hmm.
They had social security numbers. They were out here in the world. They were mm-hmm. breathing. So that debate can be had, but for me, so I can go from the Bible and say, you know, the biblical view was breath was required. Mm-hmm. And so we can have that debate.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's framed as a rights issue, it is very difficult to not see the contradiction.
Absolutely.
And depending on how you make the argument, the contradiction on each side of that. I'm not making the two things equal, because on one side of it, what's in consideration is the rights of the mother,
mm-hmm.
and the other side, it's the rights of the gun owner versus the rights of a universally agreed upon child. So you understand it? You understand the trickiness of it?
I do. And the mental gymnastics that are even required to consider those two sides, like right here, sitting right here, I'm worn out because like I want to say something, but I don't want to go through all of that.
Well, so no, like, we're not adjudicating the abortion issue on this.
Oh, no.
But you cannot ignore the fact that on their side of the argument,
mm-hmm.
there is contradiction.
Absolutely.
On the other side of the argument, there's debate. And, you know, then the contradiction is debatable.
So I think where I am with this is here. Ultimately, we're talking about the soul of a nation.
Mm-hmm.
And increasingly, because we've talked about, you know, how social media has allowed us to see each other and see ourselves, and we can either fall deeper into our echo chambers or mm-hmm. we can consider new information. You have to be so intentional to want to seek and establish understanding with mm-hmm. other people. But I've said this to you in private conversations that by and large, it feels like a psyop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you know right from wrong, but you're constantly being questioned whether your perception of right and wrong is what ultimately affects the outcome of a situation. So like, we know that it's wrong
mm-hmm.
to attack defenseless people.
Right.
We know that it is wrong. You know, if we say, I'm going to meet you after school, and we're going to have a fight and we're going to go toe to toe. It is just, it is a huge distortion of equity to bring an assault rifle to mm-hmm. what should have been, you know, a boxing match.
Yeah.
That said, I feel like I wish I could go through all of the ups and downs of it, but it's like you plan in our face, because there are obvious outcomes, bad outcomes for people, for communities, if these things go unchecked. So we used to say, your rights end where my nose begins. So mm-hmm. your right as a gun owner mm-hmm. kind of is impacted by my right to live, my right to interact and be in my community without constant threat of being undergunned. The same side says, well, if everybody's armed, somebody sees a bad actor, then they could shoot them. But mm-hmm. what have we seen with the police response? Police who are trained to neutralize threats have consistently failed to do so for whatever reasons it might have been, because I don't vacate the humanity of an officer. I see that as a person who chose a certain type of job. Mm-hmm. So at any time, as humans, our bravery could come into question. Our courage could come into question. You remember in Set It Off when they robbed the bank mm-hmm. and Vivica Fox's character, her whole thing was, what do you do when a gun is in your face? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because she had been trained on how to neutralize a bank robbery. But when it was actually happening, mm-hmm. remember the first incident before she became the robber herself,
she was attacked
mm-hmm. and she did what she thought was right. But what actually happened in the movie? What was the catalyst? She was held more responsible than the actual robber. Mm-hmm. She was looked at, why? Because it's like, oh, you must have known them, because didn't they call you by your name, whatever. So when I say playing in our face, what I'm saying is the inequity in our society contributes to why this issue persists, because obviously, and I want to say it, because we said back in the old show that there are people who claim to love God and claim to want peace and claim to want good lives for people who want this unfettered access. And there are on the other side, people who are praying for this violence to be lifted up off of them and off of their communities. And I think that spirit always wants to reconcile itself. And we're coming to this pressure point where it's like, what are you going to choose? And I don't think that that is a Christian conversation. I think it's a human conversation. I think it's a human decency conversation. We have more guns than people in this country. We are still so very uncomfortable talking about the origins, the violent origins of this country. People want to talk about guns, but they don't want to talk about inequity in our laws. And these things are connected. We've seen the examples, like we said, on the fringe of people preparing for a civil war that nobody's asking for.
Yeah.
This is just an example. We've glorified the violence. We glorify people coming out on top, picking on the defenseless. And we can't say what motivates a person to go out and bring this type of carnage. But what I am saying is the proof is in the pudding that it happens here a lot, and that those same echo chambers have the same poisons in them that the actual society does. So racism is not out here existing in a vacuum. Racism exists in those echo chambers and has people saying, I got to take you out before you take me out, before mm-hmm. something happens to me. And then you get an incident like Buffalo, and now everybody's head is in their ass. I don't like that, right? That's my personal opinion. But it's disingenuous to say that racism doesn't contribute to why things don't go unchanged. It's disingenuous to say that class, who pays the most money to get the most out of their representation, doesn't go into why things don't go unchanged. Misogyny. Yes, it's so damn hard to pass even domestic violence laws to get certain people to not have access to guns, because ultimately what you're saying is, I care about the embryo, but if it comes out as a girl, if she ends up dying, she dies because of who she dates or whatever activity she participates in. Because why wouldn't you want that girl child to live? Mm-hmm. So it comes to a point where it's like, y'all got to get serious about something, because ultimately, because we are not treating the actual wound, it is not healing.
Mm. I mean, I think through this point you made that we have more guns than people, the figure as it stands now is 120 guns per 100 people. Mm-hmm. Guns are not like that tablet that you buy at Big Lots where that's going to be broke by the end of the quarter.
Mm-mm.
Guns last a long time.
Yep.
And these things do not come out of circulation.
Nope.
So we just keep adding more, and we're continuing to buy and manufacture them. We don't have a mechanism for addressing this issue because it's part of the founding principle of the nation. I don't see. Now, so what's tricky about that is things have changed. This is the racial component you're talking about. Things have changed. So, for instance, we have a Bill of Rights that appends the original Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Those things change also. So we have the 13th Amendment that has been changed. We have a 14th Amendment that has been gutted. We have things about the founding principles that do change.
Mm-hmm.
The 4th Amendment, it's not doing me any good at this point. Right. When I can go anywhere and the policeman can put the dog in my face, unreasonable search, even though I didn't do anything. So the fact that this one amendment is unchangeable, it only benefits a certain group of people.
Absolutely.
And so the fact because that we aren't changing it.
Because when people start to participate and try to get their guns lawfully, that's when you
like the Black Panthers.
The Black Panthers. And we made that point before. They were operating within their rights under the Second Amendment, walking around scaring everybody. And all of a sudden,
for the most part, they were in the neighborhoods until they went to City Hall. But for the most part, the reason why they had the guns was to protect themselves against the state actors who had guns.
Yep.
And the image of Black people with guns was so terrorizing to the nation that there were some changes made that did not benefit us.
No.
That is unfortunate. For the entire country, it's not just unfortunate for us. The Black Panthers were helping a lot of people. So where do we stand now? We had an episode about Bibles and guns, and has anything changed about your view on the topic?
No. I think that I am growing and evolving. However, I'm calling bullshit on a lot of it. Because I think increasingly, I want to hold to this term independent, you know, as far as this political spectrum, because some things do make sense and other things don't, right? So I would like to know and believe that I operate, you know, according to what I think is right or wrong. And I definitely think for others when I go to the polls. I want and I hope and pray that people vote for me. Don't just pray for me. And I made this point before. Don't just pray for me if you're going to vote a different way that handicaps me or somehow limits my freedom, limits my life. But I have not really moved on this issue. I think that we have to get about treating the wound. And because we are being increasingly led by people who are distorting factual information for their own gain. Unfortunately, we are just in an era of the American society where mass shootings are a part of what we have to deal with. Some of us been dealing with it, though, for generations. And I'm pretty sure that that's where we were back then. I mean, if y'all want, I mean, welcome. I don't know what to tell you, because I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but the fact that it's being sustained in communities that never thought they would have to withstand that type of violence is very sickening to me, but very on brand.
In terms of my thoughts, not much has changed other than what I've seen since then, which was 4 years ago. I've witnessed the fringe idea or fringe become mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And so what comes with that is uncertainty in the path forward, because when it's a fringe group of people, let's say if it was Charlottesville was an isolated incident and those guys were out there and with tiki torches or whatever, and it was just them. Yeah, that could be dismissed. That could be handled. That could be, you know, taken care of in the courtroom. When that idea has proliferated to the extent to which it has now, you don't go back to the fringe at that point. And the same with the arguments that we're hearing around the Second Amendment, gun rights, and how we address things. Even you hear people, GOP will talk about this in terms of school safety. the issue isn't school safety. We don't, the issue, because it's not just schools. It's Buffalo, it's a shopping center, in Aurora, it was a movie theater.
And it happens in churches.
It is not school safety. School safety is a way to divert attention from the actual issue and say, all right, we need to do these things in our schools and that'll help us. We needed to have armed officers in school that didn't help them in Parkland. We need to have, make sure that we have hardened schools or whatever. Like this is not helping. And we know this. And so when these ideas become mainstream and there's no path back to them being walled off in a fringe contingent, the paths forward are limited. Yeah. And none of them are good.
Yeah, the train has left the station. I'm not sure what this looks like going forward, but we're going to have to see it through.
So we talked about, in the first episode, Bibles and guns, and discussed loosely some connections to this group who claim to be Christian. Since that time, we've discussed American civil religion and what that looks like and how that looks very similar to Christianity, but operates differently, actually has a different set of values, but uses the same language iconography Christianity does. And so it ends up being confusing. For those people who do put some importance on the Bible, the challenge that I think they have around this is, there's a saying that's attributed to Jesus in each of the synoptic gospels, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. In Matthew's 18:6, where Jesus is basically saying, anyone who causes the little ones to suffer, it's better for them to have a millstone tied to their neck and drowned in the sea. And what's challenging for that group about this is, that's some translations read, you know, causes them to sin or to stumble. And that's the prescription for what Jesus wanted. You know, if you cause the children or the young ones to sin, I believe he was talking about the vulnerable, but he's naming the children. If you cause them to sin or stumble, there's no coming back from that. There's no second chance or redemption. There is only the end of your life. And if Jesus said that about sinning and stumbling, what would we imagine Jesus would say about ending their lives or not doing anything about
to protect them?
Is it a kind or peaceful resolution? I can't imagine that that would be the case. And so for the group that wants to hold the gun in one hand and the Bible in the other, there is no resolution for that. For those who choose to stand in the way of that type of protection, there is a prescription for that. There is no reconciliation of those two ideas. So we have to figure out how we're going to move forward, because you can't hold them both. With Faith Uncut, I'm yours, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.